everybody. This is Pete A. Turner filling in for Mark Pattison. I have huge news for you all. First things first, Mark has bagged summit number 6, the Vincent Massif, the tallest mountain on the continent of Antarctica. I mean, that's the biggest news of all. Also, don't forget, Mark has his new e-learning course out. It's launched on markpattisonnfl.com or findingyoursummit.com, either place. You can also download a free PDF to get an idea of what the course has in store for you. And it's actually even an assessment tool. What does the e-learning course do? It helps you with personal goals, relationships, your summits. It helps you get going and start achieving. Fantastic things. All right, so let me also tell you about today's show. An incredible show of a NFL player, Tau Papua, who was drafted by the Browns, who ended up being drafted by the Ravens ultimately, and broke his foot in practice right at the very beginning of his career. A couple of years later, it's just not working out. And so what does he do? He says, I'm going to go to New York and become an opera singer. Yeah, I said it, an opera singer. So he takes off, doesn't know anything about being a professional opera singer, doesn't know anyone in the business, how they do it. He doesn't care. He's going to go to New York and figure it out. Next thing you know, he's trying out for Juilliard, gets a full ride, and completes the study and has been going gangbusters ever since. He is an international operatic singer, a tenor, and one of the best in the world. As always, Mark's show is brought to you by Cynthia Besteman's Violets Are Blue skin products. He uses them. He always talks about them with such a positive endorsement. I think I'm going to start using them too. Hey, listen, everybody. Mark should be back next week. We're looking forward to having him back and getting some more great shows. There are so many good ones coming up. I can't wait for you guys to hear from Mark about his adventure. Everybody take care and get out there and have a good time.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark, and I'm back with another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week, I'm jacked up because I'm speaking to another former NFL player out of New York. I'm beaming from Sun Valley, Idaho, my world HQ. I'm speaking with Tau Papua. And I know I just hacked that up, but please help me out with that name spelling again.
It's Tau Papua.
Yeah, Tau Papua. Okay, so I'm not going to say I've mastered it, but listen, it's an honor and a privilege to, number one, have another former NFL guy on the pod. Having gone through the journey myself, it's always a struggle. And I think a lot of people think, especially nowadays with the kind of money that they're paying people, is that once you make it in the NFL, your life is set. And what I found out, and I think what you found out, it is anything but set. It's just really a platform for potentially great things to happen. But, you know, like all things, you have to work at it and there's adversity and you have to fight your way through. And certainly that's what happened with you. So thanks for being on the show. I want to start off with going back to your roots when you were just a little kid. And that is, you grew up on the island of Tonga. What was that like?
Yes, I grew up in the Kingdom of Tonga, and life was really, shall we say, just free and easy. I mean, if you're hungry, you just, you know, climb up a coconut tree and grab yourself a coconut or a mango or a papaya. And if you're, you know, hungry for some seafood, you just go out and throw a line into the ocean and pull yourself up a shark or something. But life, you do have to work really hard, no matter where you live. If you want to survive, especially I'm the youngest out of 9. So my dad was a farmer in Tonga. And then, we lived life to its fullest. And then we moved to America because my parents wanted us 9 kids to have some kind of future.
Well, that must have been a huge shock. I mean, going from the total size of 288 square miles, which is pretty small when you put that all together, to moving to Salt Lake City, and all of a sudden now you're in America and you're in this gigantic landmass. I mean, that must have been a heck of a shock.
Well, what was the shock was, you know, when we got to Utah, because Utah's 4 seasons, and to see snow for the first time, that was something that was mind-blowing, to see something, you know, you just sit there and what is that? And then, of course, you touch it, you taste the snow and everything, and it's fantastic. I remember the neighbors were just laughing and everything because we were outside running around in the snow barefoot because it was like, it was awesome. It was one of those great things that, you know, one can experience.
Back in my day, I went to the University of Washington, played for the Huskies, and it was the Pac-10. And at that time, Utah and Colorado were not in that conference yet. They are now. And in the last 6 years, I served in a mentorship type role for UCLA football team. Jim Moore is my best friend. And so while he was the head coach, then I had that opportunity to be at all those different games. And so being down in Salt Lake City, being at the University of Utah, on the game nights, it was always interesting to me. And I don't know why this is, but there seems to be a fairly large Samoan, if that's the right word, community that's down there. Polynesian. Yeah, is that the right word? Yeah, so the Polynesian culture that exists down there. And I've never understood why that is of all the places that people could go.
I think, first of all, I think the reason why is because a lot of the Polynesian people, especially in Tonga, are converted to Mormonism. What you call
okay.
it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them moved to Utah because, you know, that's the root of the church where it's at. And so I grew up Methodist, but my mom's side of family are all Mormons. But, you know, so when you move to a new place, you know, you all flock together because, you don't speak the native language of that area. And so we all moved to Utah because of my mom's side of the family are Mormons.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, football, when did that come into your life in terms of, I mean, you're a big guy, you ultimately became a defensive end, which is, for people who don't know, there's smaller guys like me who are wide receivers, and there's bigger guys like that you are on the line. So where did football really kick in for you?
Football, I started playing football when I was in middle league, but I think it really kicked into gear when, when you're the first generation. Everything is, you have to work for it. And it's not, there's no like old money or anything. And so in order for me to go to college, I had to have some kind of scholarship of something. And sports, I do have to say, sports is probably the only field that gives you a full ride, that pays for everything, you know? I mean, you can't go to college on a full scholarship on a science scholarship or something, you want to pay for housing and then you get a stipend, but football paid for everything. And that was the only way for me to go to college was through football. So it kicked in when I was in high school. In high school, I had to, I played and, and wanted to go to college, and that's how it all began.
Yeah, so you played down in the Salt Lake area, defensive line, played for your high school, drew the attention of different colleges, ended up going to Weber State. And I think Weber State is in the greater Salt Lake area. It's not in Salt Lake, but close by, correct?
It is about 30 minutes, away from Salt Lake City.
Yeah. Yeah, just a great area. I love going down there and skiing, by the way.
Weber State is in Ogden, Utah, which is 10 minutes away from Salt Lake City, Utah, and it's surrounded by mountains, by waterfalls, it's awesome. It's a great place to hike, great place to ski, and a great place to camp.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different from where you are today. We joked about that before we went on live in New York. You got a lot of vertical steps, and that's your mountain, today. So, okay, so you go and you play at Weber State. Things go well for you, and ultimately you get drafted into the NFL by the Cleveland Browns. What round did you go?
I was second pick, fifth round.
Great. Awesome. And so what I read is, this is where things kind of kick in terms of the adversity that people go through, because it's not an easy ride. There's no guarantee. These things, you get invited to the combines, and if you're lucky to get through that, then you end up getting sorted out in the draft. And if you're lucky to get drafted, then you go in with 100-plus players, and of those 100, they cut it down to 52 or 55 guys. I mean, it's tough. It's like a real-life sports American Idol.
It's almost like the gladiator, you know, like when it's time to battle, they throw you into this ring to see who would survive.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was invited to the, you know, to the combine, it was at the University of Utah, and you had all the coaches there, and that's where Bill Belichick was at.
Yeah.
And so I was about 285 then. I remember going through all the, you know, the obstacles and everything, and running a 40. I remember, I think I clocked a 40 there at 4.6.
Wow.
Something like that. Beautiful. And then and doing a 225, the reps and stuff, so I think I put up 33 times or something like that. And so coming from a small school and coming into the University of Utah, I remember I had to go against some of the offensive line at the University of Utah.
Yeah.
And I remember they were Polynesians. And so I would look at them, and it was like one Polynesian, you know, against another. And it was like, you know what? I need to make some money, so I got to, you know, I got to do my job here. So it's like literally being a gladiator. You're thrown into a pit, and you have to do your best to survive, and you have to do your best to make it. And that's what I did then.
Yeah, so now you're out there, you're playing, you make the team, and now you break your arch, right?
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, obviously, so much about, especially, well, any position on the field, but especially for defensive linemen or any kind of lineman, you know, your whole base, your foundation is the key for you for success. And when you don't have your feet, you know, obviously, you don't have your power.
Right, right. I mean, when that happened, I remember when I broke the arch of my foot. And I remember what flashed, you know, in front of me was just like, what's going to happen now? Because, you know, I was new into the game.
Yeah.
I was, you know, favored by Bill Belichick and everything. But, you know, it's like a racehorse, you know. If you have a racehorse that's a champion and then it gets injured, then you should put that racehorse down or something. Unless you, I guess, if you have a name that you've been in the, you know, playing for 5-8 years and you have a big name, then they might keep you and nurture you back. But, you know, I was a young buck, and I come in and got injured, and they kept me, but, you know, they had to let me go.
Yeah, so were you part of a move also that went to from Cleveland to Baltimore?
Yep, I am the last Cleveland Browns, the original Cleveland Browns, and I am the original Baltimore Ravens, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just incredible. I think you went from, I mean, your journey of going from Tonga to landing in Salt Lake City, like culture shock with all the snow and everything, and now you're in Cleveland freezing, and then you're over to Baltimore. So incredible. So I read somewhere in there too that as a way, maybe a stepping stone is the right word, for you to make your way back into the NFL, you went up to Canada and played up there.
I talked to Bill Belichick, and he said, you know, go and play at the Canadian League for a year, and then we'll put you back on. And that's what's so great about Bill Belichick. If he believes in you, if he likes you, then he will stick by you. So I went up to Canada, and I remember the first day I ran a 40 and everything, and I pulled my hamstring, and I never pulled the hamstring. And that took me out. And so I came back to Utah, and I thought to myself, I don't know what else to do. And then I got another opportunity to go and try it for another team. And
in the NFL?
Yes. And I remember going, it was at Philadelphia, actually. And I went to Philadelphia. I remember we were doing all our drills and everything, and I just looked up to the sky, and I said, is this my calling? I don't know what my calling is. Is this my calling? And something like a small voice came into my head and said, no, you got to move left and move forward and move to New York, try out singing. And so I went back to Utah. I packed my one suitcase, got on the plane, didn't know a soul in New York, and walked around, got an apartment. And for the first 3 months, I went from door to door. I tried to find a voice teacher. I didn't know how to become an opera singer. All I knew was I had a voice. And so I met some students from Juilliard and Manhattan School of Music, and they sort of told me who their teachers were, and one thing led to another. And I was at a book signing at the Metropolitan Opera, and there was a really famous opera singer from the Polynesian Islands called Dame Kiri Te Whanua, who looked up and said, what are you doing in New York? And I said, well, I'm a singer. And she said, where are you studying? And I said, nowhere. And then she asked me, is anyone helping you? And I said, no. And she said, I would like to help you. And that's how this ball, you know, this is how it all started. Eight months later, she takes me to Juilliard, and she brings in the head of the vocal department of Juilliard, and I sing for them. And he said, well, why don't you try out for this school? So again, just like in football, there was 111 of us seniors that tried out to get into this, to Juilliard. And it went down to 50, went down to 40, went down to 12, and I was still in it. And then I got a call in December of 2008 and said, congratulations, you're one of four that we took.
Wow, that's incredible.
Okay. And that full scholarship too.
Okay, so let's reset some of that story, right? So, I mean, we've just taken a full right-hand turn. So you're totally committed to the NFL, trying to make it as a player, and then through a series of injuries, you just have this defining moment where this voice comes into your head and says, is this really what I should be doing in life? And am I really purposeful about trying to be an NFL player? And something in you said no. Where is it in the whole journey from the time that you were born to this time where you're, you know, 21, 22, 23 in the NFL, and all this is coming to you, where you learn that you had a voice? I mean, were you singing in the shower, or were you in school plays, or where did that come from?
Well, Mark, the Polynesian people are very gifted in sports, but also in music. If you go to any campus and there are a lot of Polynesian people there, you always hear them sing some kind of music or anything there. They love to sing. Like music flows into their veins. And so at church, I would be singing a hymn, and I remember people turning around and saying, you should do something with your voice. And this is after when I decided to go back to Utah and, you know, pack my own suitcase. And yeah. So I think that really, that was, you know, really something that when people tell you that you should do something with your voice, that you have a really great voice, you should listen to it.
Yeah. So I think there was a show on, and I don't know if it was trying to mimic the whole Juilliard experience, but a show called Fame, where essentially they have these really talented kids that show up at the school in New York and essentially do exactly what you did, whether it was an actor or singer or whatever. There's a breakdown and competition, whatever you want to call that. And ultimately, they just brought in a select few who was super talented, knowing that or hoping to really take that talent and really nurture it to a whole different level. And so now you get accepted to Juilliard, full ride, Scully. You're in New York. You're living the dream. All these things that you wanted to have happen. You're now, I'm sure, feeling very purposeful about your decision. What was going through Juilliard like? I mean, for you as a singer, I mean, what is the curriculum? What is that?
Well, we got to remember that, you know, while my colleagues at Juilliard were, you know, the age of in their teens, they were learning the solfege, the do re mi, and, you know, learning how to sight, and learning how to sing and how everything. I was learning plays, and I was learning how to kill a quarterback, and, you know, I was doing all that. So by the time I got into Juilliard, I didn't know how to renounce. I didn't know how to sing in Russian or German or French or Italian. And, you know, so for me, it was like I had to catch up really quick. And so, and that's where my training in football came in. It came in during that time when I was at Juilliard because I was like, I really don't know what to do. So I took everything as first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. And so I would learn how to pace myself so I don't, you know, get tired in the middle of an opera scene. You know, it's just like in football, you play your hardest, but at the same time, you have to like watch out for yourself and everything. And so that when I was at Juilliard, I brought in the skills that I learned from, you know, playing sports.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, look, for a person who loves to see the artist, you know, especially with talent go, I mean, I could sit there all day. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall and just seeing you and, you know, the others go through this. I'm sure it was fascinating for you to have these other, I'm not going to call it co-workers because they weren't workers, but, you know, co-talented, you know, people, like-minded people like you. You know, you guys all kind of blossom together at the same time.
Right, right. I mean, it's something that you just got to keep on. You know, if you have a talent and you believe in your talent, and, you know, you have to nurture it and you have to take care of it. You know, with singing, I can't be partying the night before I have to do a performance. It's just like in sports, you can't party the night before you have a big game.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I always say to my colleagues in the opera world, I always say, when that curtain goes up, it's your butt that's standing on that stage. It's not your friends that you hung out with yesterday or the day before yesterday. It's your butt. So you got to take care of yourself. You know, so that's what I learned in football too. But football, the difference between football and opera is that football is a team sport. It's a family. You become a family and, you know, you become a team and everything. In opera, it's almost everybody wants to be the quarterback. You know, everybody wants the loud cheers, the applause. Everybody wants that touchdown pass. And so it was really, really hard for me to grasp because of I came from a family, atmosphere and into a place where, no, I'm the star. No, I'm the star. And, you know, it's like it's very competitive. But at the same time, you have to be really nice to one another.
Yeah, just incredible. So one of the visuals that when I first saw this that struck me is that, you know, you've got this size. So how tall are you?
This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name MarkP20, that's MarkP20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out, LairdSuperfood.com.
Yeah, just incredible. So one of the visuals that when I first saw this that struck me is that, you know, you've got this size. So how tall are you?
I'm 6'5".
Yeah, so you're 6'5", you're this big dude, you know, you're cut up, and then when this operatic sound comes out of your mouth, it's just, you know, it's I'm not sure what I was expecting when I first heard you, but it's just like this amazing force of nature that's just coming at you full steam.
Right, right. Well, I find that the human voice is the, I would say, the closest thing to God. You know, it's from your soul to my soul. And it's a communication of a communication of you to another person, especially in the opera world when you're not mic'd. You know, you're on that stage and you have to sing over an orchestra of about 60 to sometimes 100 piece orchestra in a theater that seats 2,000 to 4,000 seats without a microphone. And you have to learn how to project. You have to learn how to throw that touchdown pass all the time. All the time. And so it's one of those things that it's really rewarding because the audience who are sitting out there listening to the purity of your voice without mics or anything is a fantastic experience.
So now you go through Juilliard. I mean, you've met this person that turns out to be maybe one of the most influential people in your life, right, in terms of really setting you on the right course, introducing you to the people at Juilliard. Now you go through it 3 years later. So now, like, any kind of time that you graduate from college or the Juilliard, whatever thing you've been doing, now you're like, okay, now you have to actually go out there and do it. So how did you put yourself in a position to be now traveling all over the world and being that star that you talked about? In terms of being the main guy up on stage, singing, projecting, how did that all come about? Do you get an agent? Is that how that works?
it starts with the nature, but it also starts back to, like I said earlier, about, you know, learning your place and learning your music and learning your language.
Yeah.
Because you have to go in and do a audition for some of the opera companies. And if these opera companies like you and like what they hear, then they hire you. If you go in and you haven't done your homework or you've been out partying and your voice is not intact, then you go in and you get a not so great audition, then you won't work. You know, you don't get the job. And so, you know, I always give credit to my roots, which is football, because it literally taught me, you know, the purpose of life. The purpose of life is to work hard and be a great person in this world and in society and everything, and give back to what you believe in. And so when I got into the music part and got an agent, I had to make sure that the agent knew what my purpose of life is, yeah, is to share this talent that I have.
And typically when you go and somebody does hire you, how long does that engagement last?
Well, it's sometimes here in America, they sort of do things really fast. You go into an opera company and you be there for a month and a half, and you do five opera shows. In Europe, what I've experienced in Germany, you're there for 3 months and you do the same amount of shows, five shows, but you're there for 3 months.
Yeah.
And America is like, you know, let's get them in, let's get them out, you know, and in Europe, it's like, let's get them in and keep them here and, you know, work their tails off. So it all depends. It all depends on what company you're with and how long that, and how long rehearsals and the performance are.
Yeah, it seems like when I saw you on these videos again, I'm coming from a person that doesn't know anything about opera other than what I've heard, you're a tenor, is that when you're singing, you're not just singing the song or songs, but you're really embracing that character and those words. I'm almost like watching this transformation of somebody else, not you, you know, becoming something, you know, within that song and what that person, whoever wrote that song, you know, was feeling at that time. And it's really interesting to watch your body transform too.
Right. It's, you know, it's like Hollywood, you know, if you play a character, you have to, you know, if you're Brad Pitt, and then you have to play whatever character, you know, that he's going to play, he can't be Brad Pitt. It's just like in football, you know, I can't be Tao. Like, you know, once you put on the helmet and shoulder pads and everything, you have to become the player, the defensive end. So if you're a nice guy, you're a nice guy outside, but when you get into the football field, you have to play your part. Just like in opera, you know, once you put on your makeup and wig and costume and everything, you have to start, you know, thinking about that character.
Yeah.
And you also have to learn the language itself. Like, I sing a lot in Italian, so I have to do a lot of the translations for the other parts so I can know what they're singing about. And so if they're, you know, singing about, like, their, you know, if the soprano is sitting there singing about her father passed away and I'm like standing there smiling and giggling, obviously I don't know what she's singing about. And so it's a lot of preparation and work to put in to translate the other people's character and everything and understand their character, but also understand your own character.
Is that the hardest part about what you do?
No, the hardest part is just staying vocally healthy and physically healthy. And, you know, so you could give a performance for people to remember. You know, our body is our instrument. You know, it's not you have a pianist who could be sick and they could walk up to a piano and play that piano because that instrument, the piano itself, is a fine instrument. Now, our body, we have to take care of it. And every day, every, you know, morning, it depends on the season, you wake up, you might have allergies and everything, you have to know your instrument and know what you have to do to take care of it.
You know, I was listening to a new podcast that I downloaded from Oprah and something, Oprah Soul or something like that. But she had Tom Brady on, and Tom is, you know, the whole conversation was about longevity and how long he'd been in the NFL and continues to want to play, you know, into his mid-40s. And that's one of the main themes that he was talking about was just about his body being the instrument and taking care of it, and that is his currency. And without that in play, you know, he's nothing. He's just, you know, his body's going to break down. And that's one of the reasons why he's been able to compete with everybody at that same competitive level like he did 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's like what I said, you know, keep on stressing like that, stressing enough that football and music and singing opera are really very close together because, again, we talked about Tom Brady, you know, your body is your instrument.
Yeah.
Just like us singers, you know, our body is our instrument and you got to take care of it. You got to exercise it, make sure that it gets enough water, enough you know, movement in it, and you got to make sure that you know, for us singers, we don't go to loud places, loud restaurants, clubs, and everything. So all those, you know, you sort of have to put it in the back seat, and you got to really take care of yourself.
Yeah, so I know that in your world, it's the constant audition process, which I know is, again, just what you do, right? And it's a life's about choices, and you could have a choice of going to work for Microsoft or somebody or some company like that and sit behind a desk and play it safe, or go for it like you've done and feeling very purposeful about the people that you're touching and the things that you're doing. Do you have a current gig going on right now, or is this always in the future, in the future, in the future?
Sometimes it's in, you know, sometimes you can be booked 2 years in advance. And, you know what's coming up, you know, for the next 2 years. Or sometimes you sit around after a job and you're like, okay, what's next? And you're waiting for the next gig that would come in. Fortunately, I have had the opportunity that I've been working steadily, and which is good, traveling to different places. I mean, it just all depends on you and your agent and what they're looking for, too.
Yeah, well, it seems on my research of you, you know, you've done several different gigs worldwide, and it just seems like a pretty exciting life for a guy who, you know, was born and raised up until 5 years old in Tonga.
Right. Well, you know, when I graduated from Juilliard, there was a elderly lady there. I think she was in her mid-90s.
Yeah.
And she came up to me and she said, she said, I've worked here at Juilliard forever. And she said, you're the first Polynesian that graduated from Juilliard.
Wow.
And I looked at her and I was like, wow, are you serious? She goes, yes. He goes, there would be people from Hawaii that would be there, but they're not Polynesian.
Yeah.
You know, but to have a full-blood Polynesian person, you're the first. And I thought, wow, that's great. You know?
Yeah. And where do you see this going? And maybe that's an easy answer, because where you want this to go in the future is actually what you're doing today. But is there another level that you know, as you go through this journey that you're on and being in these different operas, that, you know, this can then lead to that?
I've always put it into my thoughts that I, you know, before I leave this world, I would like to make some sort of footprint, you know, in this world of something that is good and something that has been good and giving. And so I, you know, I see myself continuing to climb this ladder of, we call it success, to reach, you know, I like to go to Tonga or to Polynesia, to Samoa, to Fiji, to, you know, Tonga, and give a concert or give an opera because they've never seen an opera. You know, the only thing that they hear of is maybe the famous Luciano Pavarotti, who's gone now.
Yeah.
But to take an actual opera and produce it and give it to the people of the Polynesian islands would be a dream come true, because they wouldn't know what hit them. You know, to have a full orchestra there, to have sets and, you know, designs and costumes and everything, a conductor and the lights and everything, and have people come and sit back and enjoy and go, wow, this is opera. You know, they've never experienced anything like that.
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
Yeah, I think it would just be mind-blowing. I mean, it would be different than giving a concert, but to give a full opera of a story of something would be mind-blowing.
I've been in Fiji. You mentioned that, and I was also at the opera many years ago in Verona, Italy.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. And the thing that made it so incredible is that, first of all, we were in this old stone amphitheater, and we were the light source, and so we all had candles, and so we were in the audience, you know, holding these candles up. And then as the orchestra was playing and these two people went through their whole story, their love story, I had no idea what they were talking about. But you could see from the emotions and the interactions that this guy loved her, and then he was crushed, and then they came back, and you know, it was just amazing, you know, whole thing that went together. And I walked out of there like, that was amazing. It was incredible.
That's what makes opera special and wonderful. But at the same time, that what scares people from opera is because they sit there and go, well, I don't speak Italian. How am I supposed to understand this?
Yeah.
I don't know, or German or French or Russian or whatever. And so that's why opera companies have subtitles, especially here in America. Everybody has subtitles. And so if I was to do an opera in Polynesia, the islands there, there has to be subtitles in their native language so they could read it and follow the story and cry and laugh and, you know, scream or whatever as they're reading the subtitles.
So living in New York, is that the epicenter of where you need to be as it relates to?
Yes, it is. Somebody asked me, why New York? And I said, because New York, if you want to be an opera singer or a Broadway singer, you come to New York. If you want to be a movie star and everything, you go to California.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
If you want to be a skier, you come to Sun Valley. All the way. There you go. Full circle.
No, it's the best snow.
And, that makes a lot of sense to me. You're a guy that has gone after his passion. You're not afraid to take chances. And, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, People Overcoming Adversity and Finding Their Way. But I think part of finding your way is also finding your purpose. And I've certainly found that case for myself of really trying to do things that have meaning in life and then try to pay it forward. And it's all the same stuff that you're doing. As we kind of move to the end here, I think it would be incredible for the audience just to give a little sample of your voice, your golden voice that you were gifted with, and just give us some kind of idea of what you do.
Okay, let me think of something. I'll give you a couple of measures.
Yeah. Yep. Nothing. You don't have to get too crazy, but I've heard you, and you're a talent. I wish I could sound like this.
All right.
Awesome. You. You're hired. Slam dunk. Hey, listen, where can people find you? I know on stage, but actually, follow where you're going to be in these next.
Sure. I am on, Facebook as Scott Upapua, and also on Instagram at T Opera Ball, and also on Twitter too, Taupapua, but also on my, you can find me on my website at taupapua.com.
Okay. So what we're going to do, because I know I kind of hacked up your name at the very beginning, I would call you Mr. T just to keep it short, but we're going to put a lot of these things in the show notes so people can find you. And I can't wait, for everybody out there to listen and hear your story, because it's remarkable and you're an inspiration. And, keep reaching for the stars.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So Until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.